Hello, and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast, a podcast with two siblings who love books.
We love books so much that we missed last week because we were swimming in books.
Gabs was out of town-ish.
Well, first I moved.
Well, that too.
And then I went out of town.
Yeah, Gabs is allowed to have fun once per year, and she was using up her weekend for the year.
So, we were almost able to record, but I think I got the book to Ben about a day late, because we shared it this time. So.
Yeah.
We barely missed the mark. Sorry, guys. So this week, we read The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie. He is a well-known Native American author, if you know Native American authors.
I can't say that I do. Now I know one, for sure.
Yeah.
And I probably know one or two others. I just probably don't know that I know them.
He wrote a book of short stories, one of his other recent works, called The Lone Ranger and Tonto Fist Fight in Heaven.
That's a good title.
Yeah. I remember reading reviews for that and being interested, and then I discovered that was the same guy who wrote this, and I was like, oh, hey.
There you go. So I wouldn't necessarily have guessed the name Sherman Alexie was Native American.
Yeah, me neither, for that matter. I'm glad he is, though, because otherwise this book would be way dumber.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. Very, very quickly, actually. This is a YA book, kind of a coming-of-age tale, I suppose?
Yeah, we probably also mentioned this is continuing our Banned Book Month theme, which is why we chose it.
Oh yeah, that too.
Forgot to mention that. But yeah, it is YA. I put coming-of-age in there because he's the right age to come of age. And he does, like, realize some things, but at the same time, there's no, like, huge, like, you are a man now moment or anything.
Yeah, it's a fairly static book in a lot of ways. And we'll talk about that a little bit in a moment. Want to get the preliminaries out of the way first.
Plot synopsis.
Let's see, what do we end up settling on?
Being an Indian sucks.
Oh, right, that. historically, that's certainly true.
And Junior talks about it a pretty good amount.
Yeah, and the description of life on the reservation certainly is not very appealing. I wouldn't want to live there.
Yeah, me neither. Especially if you have to live in Washington, jeez. Oh, wait. When I was like, oh, Spokane. Oh, that's in Washington. I mean, at least they're not like in Oklahoma, I guess. Like, it could be worse, maybe? I would rather live in Washington than Oklahoma.
I suppose. Though I don't think they exactly gave you the choice cuts of land when they were putting you on reservations.
Yeah, probably not.
Probably not.
That's a solid point. He makes some mention about, because I think they're the Spokane tribe, but he mentions their reservation is like kind of way out in the middle of nowhere. Doesn't he say it's like 2 miles past, like, who cares?
Oh, yeah.
Something like that.
Well, it's 20 miles from the fairly small town where he ends up going to school.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So
that probably says something as well.
Mm-hmm. They're just way out in the middle of BF nowhere.
Yeah. And so, you know, because it does, a lot of it does take place on the reservation, and a lot of the, I guess the setting and all of the things that the setting kind of extends into, the atmosphere, kind of the emotional and cultural background of a lot of this book, because it is from the reservation, the fact that Sherman Alexie grew up on a reservation and is a Native American helps a whole lot.
Yeah.
I was telling Gabs earlier that if this book had been written by, say, a white person, even if they'd done all their research, I would probably wonder what percentage of this was bullshit.
Yeah. You'd be like, okay, well, you know, I've heard some of these things before. Like, yeah, I know there's an alcohol problem or people on reservations are poor, but then I'd be like, but you've never lived on one, so to some degree you have to be kind of full of shit, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And some of the details in there are just things that I don't know that you would have come up with if you hadn't actually lived it, kind of the sense of community and the idea of, well, like, that kids are getting in fistfights pretty much constantly, and it's not, like, it's not really a big deal.
I actually loved that difference between the reservation and the white high school when he was talking about, on a reservation, you get into a fistfight if someone insults you. You think someone is thinking about insulting you. Someone has ever insulted anyone related to you in the valley.
Right.
You punch people in the face all the time. And how...
And if you're a weak kid, you punch him first because that might be the only chance you get.
You get to throw a punch at
all. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and then he's at this white school and a kid comes up to him and says something incredibly racist.
Yeah.
And he punches him in the face because he thinks that's protocol. And the kid's like, why'd you punch me, man? I'm right. So confused.
Well, it was like the biggest dude in the school, too.
He like knocks him flat on his ass.
Right.
Yeah, I did think that was something that I would not have thought about in terms of...
Well, yeah, and so he's going, this is protocol, and I'm going to punch this kid, so when this, like, 6'7", corn-fed white boy...
Yeah.
Whoops me, I'll at least have hit him once.
Yeah.
And instead he becomes like the crazy Indian kid.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with that guy.
Punch you in the face. Buys himself some respect though.
Yeah, he does.
Or I liked the detail of on his first day of school at the reservation, he opens up his math textbook and his mom's name is in the front cover. And he goes, oh, fuck, my geometry textbook is 30 years old. And
he was so pumped for geometry, guys.
He'd been super excited because triangles get him hard.
Yeah.
Or whatever he said. Whatever he said about triangles.
His penis is a scalene triangle.
Giving him a boner.
He didn't say that, but he should have said that.
It's kind of like women in curves, but for some reason, triangles? Fair enough.
One of the many boners that occur in this book.
Yes, he does get quite a few of them. But, like, that's something that I never thought about, the fact that, like, someone on a reservation stays on a reservation and then you kind of perpetuate the cycle. So, like, he gets his mom's geometry textbook. I feel like that's not a detail that you would necessarily think to put in there.
Yeah, it feels kind of autobiographical.
Yeah, well, and then he... you know, stands up and throws the book at the teacher's face, which
right.
is hilarious. So, that is a good strength of this book, and helps a lot while you're reading it, because at some times I feel like while reading it, you might go, but you can't, well, no, okay, I mean, if you live on the reservation, I don't know shit. One of those things.
Yeah, it felt pretty real to me,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And so, again, his experiences definitely helped with that.
Because yeah.
I just don't see those details being cooked up by someone who hadn't lived it.
Yep. Yeah, so the book's from the point of view of Junior. Well, Arnold Spirit Junior.
Right.
But he goes by Junior. And apparently that's also a Native American thing.
I was going to say, apparently they're all Junior. So if you walk into the general store and say Junior, like 12 dudes will turn around and look at you.
Yeah, that was pretty funny. I thought it was weird that his entire class thought that was a weird name.
Yeah, is it that weird?
I don't think so.
I don't think I'm not sure that I've ever actually met someone who goes by Junior, but I don't think I would. At it. I don't think it would weird me out.
Yeah, I'd be like, okay.
It feels a little anachronistic, if anything.
Yeah.
It's like, I feel like there were a lot of juniors in, like, the 1950s.
Hey there, junior.
And there haven't been a lot of juniors since then.
Well, I mean, maybe in white culture.
Yeah, have that's ever... true. I say the only juniors I can think of are both, well, they're both athletes, and they're both non-white, and I'm pretty sure they're both, I'm pretty sure both guys are either first or second generation Americans.
Yeah.
And so maybe it is more of a thing in non-white culture.
Yeah. I was thinking of Juno Diaz, who is a famous author from, oh fuck, where is he from? Dominican, something like that. He is a character in a couple of collections of short stories named Junior.
Oh.
That's what reminded... I was reminded of that one.
Okay.
Reading about Junior. Anyways. Yeah, so... I mean, well, the title of the book is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian. It's not really written like a diary.
No, it's not with, like, diary
date style entries or anything. But, I mean, that should tell you that it's from the perspective of the character whose diary it ostensibly is.
Right.
I guess we could talk a little bit about Junior.
Yeah, he's, well, okay, so he's an Indian, I think. I hope that's obvious by now.
Yeah, we should also mention that he calls himself and his all his family and stuff Indians.
Yeah.
And I've, like, PC'd myself a lot into saying Native American for a long time.
Right.
Because I feel like saying Indian is, like, not cool, but then, like, an actual Native American uses that term. So then I was like, oh.
I feel like I've read that before somewhere or another, but I don't remember when or where.
Yeah.
I...
Well, I guess now people are saying American Indian, so...
Yeah, that's probably the one I've heard more often, or it even gets abbreviated to, like, Amerindian sometimes, which is obnoxious. I'm like, oh, come on, just throw ICANN back in there.
I'm a U.S. Indian.
I'm a U.S. American. but, he's, the part-time label, he's going to a mostly white, actually probably entirely white except for him.
That's what it sounds like.
Small town high school outside the reservation, because he's got to escape, man, or he'll die.
Yeah, actually, him throwing his geometry textbook at his teacher's face prompts his teacher to say, you need to get the fuck off the reservation, man.
Right, and not in a I'm mad at you, get out of here way, but in a you threw the book because it's killing you to be here kind of way.
Yeah, exactly.
A weirdly sympathetic reaction.
Yeah. Get out.
And so, like, he kind of becomes part of his new school's culture over the course of the year, but he definitely still retains his old culture, like...
Yeah, he makes the comment that when he's at school, he's Indian, and when he's on the reservation, he's, like, white.
Yeah.
Because everyone on the not everyone, but a lot of people on the reservation are pissed at him for betraying them and going to a white school.
Right.
And then all his white classmates are just like, oh, weird, a non-white person.
Exactly. And he's a pretty bright kid.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of the reason that it's killing him to be stuck in the stagnant environment of the reservation, I think. It's part of the reason he's able to succeed at a school that's in much better shape, probably, as well.
Yeah, so that was interesting, in that conversation he has with his geometry teacher, where they talk about his sister, and his geometry teacher said, yeah, your sister had these dreams of writing romance novels,
right.
And Junior starts thinking about someone daring to have a dream, and, like, thinking themselves worthy of anything, and... You know, the teacher basically says, like, in order to keep your dreams and, like, think you're worth anything, you kind of have to move off the reservation. And he has this realization of, like, of, living thinking that you just are going to have to give up your dreams and, like, not amount to anything. And that you're not as good as white people.
Yeah. It's kind of, in a way, it's not an exact parallel, but it's a little bit the idea of the small town person who has to leave town to seek after their fortune and their dream.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that idea, though more depressing, maybe.
Yeah, more stacked against him.
yeah, well, I mean, it's real hard to escape the momentum of your background like that, I would mm-hmm. imagine. And Junior's a fairly cynical kid as a result
of yeah.
his upbringing, I think. I don't know how you wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Like, if you met an Indian who grew up on a reservation who was as innocent as a...
like, bright-eyed and yeah. naive, you'd be like, what the fuck?
Right. Like, if he was right... If this book was The Perks of Being a Wallflower, that would be weird.
Yeah. If Charlie was the...
right.
narrator somehow.
And so you almost, like, have to be, and I think that sense of humor is... It sounds like the reservation... The people on the reservation have kind of a little bit of a black sense of humor anyway.
Uh-huh.
And it's probably part of how they do their day-to-day thing, you know?
Helps you cope with the world.
Yeah. Well, and everybody is poor, and a lot of people have drinking problems and issues that tend to go along with poverty and tend to go along with, you know, centuries of repression by...
Yeah. by society in general.
Yeah. Usually does not become a happy, optimistic place under those circumstances. Yeah.
But Jesus Christ. I never realized that there were trains. And all of a sudden I feel like... All of the trains.
I wonder if that'll be one of those sounds that doesn't even show up when I'm listening to it later.
We're at Winfield. Trains are passing by, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And I just took to matching the pitch of the
oh.
whistle, like, train! Train!
And say in Comedy Bang Bang, when they were in their old studio, they were really close to the airport, and so sometimes a plane would go overhead and it would just... like, be deafening, and so they would take a plane break, and they had, like, music queued up, and the adults started being like, plane break, and singing, and being goofy, until it was gone.
Train break!
I'll try to find some train break theme music.
Anyway.
So...
Junior...
Yeah, hey, what else do we want to say about Junior?
I guess the other significant thing that we still need to talk about with Junior is the fact that he draws, and he wants to do comics eventually with his life. And that's actually incorporated into the book itself, because there are little sketches he draws of things around him, drawings of family members and comics and stuff
mm-hmm.
that are tucked in that are relevant to the text at hand.
Yeah, they're usually pretty cute pictures.
Yeah.
There are a couple more serious ones thrown in there. But sometimes those pictures are used to give some of the description and maybe even to a degree the characterization.
Like, yeah.
There are a bunch of sketches of people and with labels and prices pointing at, like, all the items of clothing they have
yeah,
on.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think that was a really effective way of getting across a quick sketch of, okay, here's where this person came from because they have, you know, like either $10 shoes that are 2 years old and falling apart, or they're wearing like $600 boots or...
Yeah, and in particular, I'm thinking of the one that's like the half of the Indian student, half of the white student.
Yeah.
And they have, like, you know, here are the shoes, like, the Indian kid wears, and the shoes the white kid's wearing.
Right.
They have, like, the new jeans from The Gap, and the Indian kid's wearing $10 pants from Kmart, and,
right. Like, the generic white t-shirt versus, like, the $80 designer
the polo thing. Yeah.
Yes, I mean, that was a really good way of just showing that contrast without having to
say, here's the difference between white kids and...
Right, without having to talk about it in, like, an obnoxiously upfront way, or even just trying to work in the detail a half dozen times after that. It was just, here's your picture. It's like, oh, well, that really makes a pretty stark difference there.
Yeah.
So, I thought that that was a really effective supplement to the storytelling.
Yeah, most of the time I really liked it.
Yeah, I mean, I never hated it. There were probably a couple of them that I didn't necessarily need to see. But
yeah, but it wasn't like, oh, yeah. Get out of here, yeah, stupid picture. Right.
It wasn't like, oh, another sketch.
Yeah, I was never annoyed by it.
It's like, oh, here's another comic. Let's see if it's cute.
Yeah.
Because usually they're kind of cute.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah, that's cute.
We had, like, you know, he was talking about missing school, and he had a comic about the reasons that I missed school, and...
Yeah.
Like, talking about couldn't find a ride, no money for gas, like, all the different panels.
Stay home and watch TV.
Yeah. Or the one with his mom, like, don't leave me.
Yeah. His poor mother.
Yeah, she's had some shitty shit.
Yep. So, anything else to say about Arnold Jr.?
I guess not.
I mean, as far as direct character traits, I don't know that there are tons more. You get a lot of his voice, since he tells the story.
Yeah.
And I think that's more how you get to know him than anything.
Yeah.
So, some of the other cast, there is family members.
His mom, dad.
Yeah. Dad's an alcoholic, but only when he's drinking.
Mm-hmm. So his dad claims.
His sister is kind of the discouraged former optimist, maybe.
Yeah.
Be the best way to
describe. She's apparently been living in the basement for, like, 2 years and doing nothing with herself.
Yeah, and then finally runs off and gets married, elopes, essentially.
Yeah.
And then dies in a fire.
Trying to do something.
Sigh.
Yeah. It's not even her fault.
I know!
His mom, I guess.
She's a little clingy, but some of that is related to tragedy and trying to hold on to the family member.
Yeah. I mean, she's also supportive. Like, when he tells his parents, I want to go to the white school, they're just like, okay, we'll make it happen.
Yeah.
There's no, like, why are you leaving the reservation?
Right. Or even like, let's sit down and talk about this. Not even trying to talk him out of it. Like, they're just like, oh, that's what you want? That's what we'll do.
No problem.
Yeah.
We'll figure it out.
They strike me as parents who are good parents, and especially in the sense of trying to do what they can do within their ability to do things.
Yeah.
Like, including his dad's alcohol issues, where he's a good... He's a good father, and he tries to be a good father, except for when he's gone.
Yeah. And he's out on his drinking binges, and...
Yeah. And then his, grandmother, Arnold's grandmother, is kind of the glue, I guess. She's the strong one in the family.
Yeah.
The tough, funny one. Who seems to know every Indian in the country.
Yeah, apparently. It's like traveled to all of the reservations and everyone knows her.
Right. She goes to all the powwows, not to dance, just to hang out, it sounds like. She's like, yeah, I like a good Indian party. Also died. Sigh.
She gets hit by a drunk driver?
Right? Yeah, yeah.
And he actually makes the special mention, and I should actually... Maybe first mention there are three deaths in the book, and all of them are caused by alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
His grandma gets hit by a drunk driver. His dad's friend gets shot when he and another guy are arguing over who finishes a bottle of wine. And then his sister throws a party, and one of their drunk guests decides to, like, fry bacon or something and leaves the stove on and leaves the food and it catches fire and burns down the trailer.
Yeah, while she and her husband are passed out.
Yeah, so he's like, he talks a lot about problems of alcoholism in the Indian community, and I mean, obviously it causes the three deaths that happen in the book, but he makes special mention that his grandma never drank at all.
Yeah, so it was kind of a double blow, because she went out in a way that she seemed like one of the few Indians unlikely to go out that way.
Uh-huh. And it leads Junior himself to actually promise to his mom that he'll never drink.
Man, it's just... drinking seems like it would hold less appeal under those circumstances, doesn't it?
Yeah, you'd think. Although if you're trapped in a community of alcoholics, it's probably a lot easier to become one yourself.
Oh, sure. I mean, I could see how that would be a hard promise to keep over time.
Yeah.
But as a teenager, I can definitely see how you might try harder than average to avoid it for a few years, at least. Okay, so other reservation folks, there's his best friend, Rowdy.
Rowdy.
Rowdy, who lives up to his name.
Yeah, he's just a rowdy fellow.
He's a fighter.
He likes to start fights and, you know, like, randomly hit people's cars with bats and shit. He's that kind
of
guy.
Yeah. He seems like he seems a little angry at the world.
I was going to say, he has some anger issues, I think, that stem from his shitty home life.
Mm-hmm.
His dad's also an alcoholic, but he's a mean drunk.
Yeah.
Instead of a disappear for a couple days drunk like like Junior's dad.
Right. Rowdy spends most of the book being mad at Junior for leaving the reservation.
Yeah, we know from the beginning they're best friends, they spend almost all their time together, and then when Junior tells him he's leaving to go to school, Rowdy gets really pissed off and basically refuses to talk to him until the very end of the book.
Yeah, and they have it's not really that strange of a relationship, but it's a very teenage bro relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, every time they do have a conversation, like, they're insulting each other. They never really say anything that's too deep or serious, I feel like.
Yeah. I mean, they kind of... Junior kind of forces it on Rowdy a little bit once
or
twice.
Yeah, he tries.
And Rowdy reacts the way you'd expect him to.
Yeah. So, hey man, let's play a game of pickup. And he's like, I'll bet I'll kick your ass, pussy.
Yeah.
Bring that means on, he friend. Likes me,
guys.
Like, what, bud? I was like, do teenage boys really act like that?
Sometimes. And I have seen a couple of friendships form after someone else punched someone else in the face. So, sometimes it does happen that
Apparently
way.
Apparently that's a thing.
Sometimes it does happen that way. Not every time, not with every teenage boy, but with some teenage boys, that's not out of the question.
Getting punched in the face.
I don't really fully understand it myself, because I was not one of those teenage boys, but I knew some of them. So, I guess the white kids.
Yeah, yeah.
We
already mentioned Roger, who's the football player. He punches in the face and then
they become friends. Turns out to be a super nice guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, I mean, the first comment he makes is horrible.
Right.
But then...
But once his alpha maleness is out of the way...
He drives people everywhere when... Junior makes a comment about, like, having forgotten his wallet at home... Roger basically just realizes, oh, he's poor and, like, trying not to show it, and just gives him, like, $40 and...
He's like, here, that should cover it. Don't worry about paying me back, dude. It's cool. We're bros.
Yeah, and then afterwards, like, drives him back to the reservation,
And he's kind of his best... He's kind of his best buddy at school, I think.
They're on the basketball team together.
Mm-hmm. And Roger... was he the one that led the students to back him up when that one teacher was being horrible to him? It was
Gordy.
That was Gordy, okay. So, Gordy, if Roger is Junior's jock friend, then Gordy is his nerd friend.
Oh, yeah. Gordy's a giant fucking nerd.
Though it sounds like Gordy is literally a giant fucking nerd and is built kind of like an offensive lineman himself.
Oh, yeah. That's true. I forgot about that. He's still like a country boy who did farming growing up, so.
I kind of pictured him being like a more muscular version of me. A little on the tall side, a little on the blocky side, but, like, throws hay bales around, isn't
yeah.
isn't fat from playing the trombone.
He's like PETA from The Hunger
Games. Yeah, there you go. Except less annoying.
Yeah. Well, there's that.
And, boy, even for a nerd, he's nerdy.
Oh, my, yeah. He just talks like a huge nerd.
Though he gets a boner for books, which, frankly, should be the tagline for this podcast.
Yeah, no kidding. There's, like, actually a scene where he just tells Junior, like, you need to get a boner for these books.
No, not a real boner. A metaphorical boner. Metaphorical boner. Yeah, that was a really good scene.
Don't you have, like, a little bit of a chub right now? Yeah, I think I do. That was good stuff.
Yeah, that was good stuff.
I like the entrance of Gordy when Junior corrects a teacher, and the teacher is offended and says, Gordy, why don't you tell us how that really works? And then he's like, that's how it works.
No, that's how it works.
What Junior just said. And then the teacher was like, oh, shit. I actually trust this white kid.
And that led a couple chapters later to Junior basically walking up to Gordy and saying, we should be friends.
Yeah. Gordy's like, yeah, right.
What are you talking about? I mean, we should be friends, but why should we be friends? Just because we should. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to get boners for books.
Yeah, basically. We can be friends if you study with me, essentially.
Right. Acceptable. I accept your conditions.
Your terms and conditions sound fine.
And then there's Penelope, who is the hot girl, essentially. Kind of. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not much of a love interest going on. I mean, they kind of date, but that's about it.
Yeah, they have kind of an interesting relationship, what there is of it.
Yeah.
Because they're certainly not the hot and heavy type of couple.
No,
there's this weird pseudo-dating thing going on, but, like, they kind of have this weird understanding of each other where they're both, like, Junior is an outsider, and I think that even though Penelope is popular, she probably kind of feels a little bit like an outsider.
When they bond he discovers that she's, like, puking in the bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So she tells him she's bulimic, and then they kind of have this moment of, like, shared understanding, because she has this, like, effed up thing going on that makes her different and isolated, and, you know, then he's from the reservation and has a more obvious way to be singled out from the crowd. But
right.
They kind of fit together that way. And he's a nice guy, so.
Yeah, so you could do worse.
They seem to get along. She's apparently super pretty. He sounds kind of like a giant nerd, but.
Yeah. That's okay. They figure. They figure something out, I guess.
They're also like 14 years old, so.
Yeah. It's meaningless.
What are you going to do?
Essentially, it's meaningless.
Never going to last.
So, anything else to say about characters?
No.
Okay. So, issues.
Yeah.
Well, the obvious one would be racial issues.
Yeah. We've already talked about this a little bit, but.
Yeah, I mean, we've made a lot of references to how it's, in this book, it's not as much the direct racism. There are a couple moments of it, but they're really more in the vein of, we're kids and you're new and weird and an outsider, and we're going to use this because it's a different thing, more than in the sense of, I'm an actual racist, except for Penelope's father.
Yeah, who is an actual racist.
Who is an actual racist.
But everyone else isn't like, I hate Native Americans specifically. No.
It was not racism as much as just racial issues. Here's the conditions that these Indians have to live under, and or certainly at least do live under, and how hard it is to escape from that, and how different it is from the outside world.
Yeah, it's mostly, you know, here's a look at Indian life, and then how different it is from these white people, and in a lot of regards, how much worse it is off for Indians. Because we already talked about the alcoholism thing, but Junior hits on that a lot for a good reason, because it seems like just about everyone at the reservation is a giant alcoholic.
Yeah, I mean, as far as, like, as far as issues that affect his life and his culture, I'd say alcoholism and poverty have more to do with it than race does.
Mm-hmm. But it's tied into the race, because they wouldn't be in that situation if they hadn't been Native American in the first place.
Right. Like, it's that... I mean, it's similar to the issues that arise in society at large in many ways, where it's just... where a tinge of racial overtones are unavoidable with a lot of those issues just because of the historical background of the country. And this is just a version of it we don't think of very often, because you just... and, you know, for... obvious reasons, like, you know, genocide, you don't see very many Native Americans walking around, and certainly not pure-blooded.
Yeah.
I mean, you run into a lot of, especially in college campuses, you run into a lot of the, I'm 1/16th Cherokee on my grandfather's side. Great, tell me something about your culture. I'm white. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay.
I did have a friend who's actually legitimately, like, part Indian. You could tell, because he, like, looked part Indian.
Right.
But yeah, not like the typical, well, I'm part Cherokee, and it's, like, always part Cherokee.
Yes, it is. It's always part Cherokee. Shut the fuck
up. You are not. I think a lot of people have some kind of drop of Indian blood in their ancestry somewhere, but...
well, in the United States, it's just so likely that you have a little of everything somewhere in there, especially if your family's been here for a long time.
Yeah. I think Mom was telling us that we have something back, but then at the same time, like, a lot of Americans claim that shit and, like, have no proof to back it up, so.
Right. And, I guess this kind of is tangential in some ways, but we were talking before we started recording about how a lot of young Native Americans are leaving their reservations now, much the way that Junior is kind of did and is trying to more permanently, it seems like, and how it seems pretty likely that Native Americans as a pure race, so to speak, are likely to disappear within a few generations. And I guess the whole 1/32nd Cherokee thing, other than some sort of weird white guilt street cred thing, like, will there be a point where having some of that in your family tree seems historically significant, just to, like, as a reminder that they were a real people that inhabited a whole continent at one point.
Yeah. I get depressed when I start thinking about Native Americans. So, I guess I should also mention the alcoholism thing, for anyone who doesn't know, is also historically tied into Europeans. Because traditionally, like, when they were just chilling on their own, I mean, Indians, like, did drug, like peyote and some other things like that are kind of, like, traditional Native American.
Oh, sure. And people everywhere in the world figured out that you could ferment certain things and get interesting liquids out of it.
Yeah, but, the Europeans introduced them to, like, all the hard liquor, and they basically had no system built to handle it because they had never had it before.
Yeah.
And it just started fucking shit up.
Sure enough.
I just wanted to point that out. It's not like all Native Americans for all of time have been alcoholics. Like, right. That's also tied into the stigma and, like, the, you know, shoving them onto reservations kind of shit.
Well, yeah, as I say, I guarantee you if you watch some pre-politically correct cinema or cartoons, you'll see a representation of an Indian with a giant red nose and a bottle of liquor somewhere along the line. Or more likely the moonshine jug, you know, but there that word firewater comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
Is that a historical term or is that a pre-politically correct representation?
Like someone saying, I bet they called it firewater.
Yeah, it totally seems like
I don't know actually.
Yeah.
Let me look that up. Where's our intern?
That's right. We found something more.
We're talking to you. Aside from that, we have, of course, touching on feminism, because kind of have to.
That's what we do. We're trying to figure out if the women being not terribly fleshed out was a result of mild unintentional author chauvinism like it frequently is, or if it was just that, honestly, the characters aren't fleshed out in this book.
Yeah, like, a lot of the other characters don't get a ton of face time or a lot of deep and interesting characteristics, so maybe it's not necessarily that the women characters get the shaft, but just that the characters in the book in general don't get a ton of it.
I feel like I don't really know anyone from this book except for Junior and a little bit Gordy.
Yeah.
Because he's so nerdy in that one scene that that leaves an impression. But everyone else is kind of... I'm not going to remember anything about these characters a couple months from now. More than likely.
So maybe that's a little more forgivable and... Also, I kind of thought of the point of, you know, Junior is 14, so is he going to view Penelope with a great amount of depth, or can we kind of forgive his characterization of her because he's trying to be honest to a 14-year-old narrator's voice?
Yeah, I mean, every time his brain would try to go in that direction of, oh, this is a person I can have a relationship with... The just, like, boobs interfere.
Yeah. Hormones.
Boner time again.
Boner time.
Boner time might be the name of this episode.
Oh, man.
And boner for books will definitely be our tagline for a while.
So speaking of, that was our last moral issue, was sexual. And we just wanted to mention it quickly, the fact that Junior does get some boners, talks about masturbating a few times.
Yep.
That's been one of the bases for arguing the book should be banned. I saw is that some people consider it a little smutty.
Yeah, and
because of that, we
both just laughed at that. Like the representation. First of all, no one in this book is having sex.
Mm-mm.
People in this book probably want to, but I don't think that even gets explicitly mentioned.
Yeah.
There's just boners and a small amount of masturbation references.
And I'd say, like, the masturbation in this book isn't as pervasive or, like, weird as it was in The Chocolate Wars, for example.
Yeah.
When it was more, like, in your face.
It's just a segment of Americans that are so uncomfortable with the idea of anybody even thinking about sex.
Yeah.
At least in a way where even one other person hears that another person might be thinking about sex.
I was mentioning to Ben that someone said, you know, oh, this book's a little smutty, I might not give it to a 14-year-old. And I was thinking, I would give this book to my 14-year-old in a second. I'm not concerned about the quote-unquote smuttiness. Yeah. Like, I wouldn't even feel the need to address that. I was like, if anything, afterward, I would be like, let's talk about Native Americans.
Right.
How their lives work in American society.
Yeah, we've read, if you're going to equate any sex with smut, then we've read far smuttier books than this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, 50 Shades of Grey obviously pops into mind.
Yeah, and I wonder how many of the people who think this is smut wouldn't consider that smut because it's for them instead of for their kids.
That is crazy smutty.
Well, that is actually...
like the definition of smut.
I mean, I agree. And I'm not even anti-smut. I think if 50 Shades of Grey makes you happy, then I support you reading 50 Shades of Grey. Just don't expect me to enjoy it with you.
I support you reading better smut than 50 Shades
of Grey. I would prefer you read better literary smut than that. I overheard a conversation the other day where someone was suggesting 50 Grades of Shay to her friend.
Grades of Shay.
Wow, I totally said Grades of Shay. Let's just stick with that.
50 Grades of Shay.
That's a nice little spoonerism there. was suggesting 50 Shades of Grey to her friends and used the phrase well-written, and I almost had to interrupt their conversation. Even as an unintentional eavesdropper.
You're like, no.
I need to correct this. This might give you a lady boner, but it is not well written.
In fact, it is very poorly written.
It is literally garbage.
Literally garbage. Hooray.
Yay. One of these days, one of these years, I will get over 50 shades.
But it is not this year. A day may come when you see the fall of man. But today is not that day.
It's going to be on my tombstone. It's like, fuck 50 shades.
Fuck 50 shades. P.S. I love you.
P.S.
Not 50 shades. Okay. Anyway. Okay.
So you're...
Themes.
So moving on to themes, I guess the first one is the same as the plot synopsis.
Being Indian sucks!
Yeah. Thanks, white people. For nothing.
For fucking up our lives forever. But in addition to that, Ben and I did talk about how there are a lot of issues in the community, obviously, poverty and death and all of that, but Junior also does a really good job of bringing up what he believes are the positives of being an Indian living on the reservation as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just that being an Indian sucks and, like, it's a woe is me tale or anything.
Yeah.
Because he does talk a lot about a sense of closeness, not only in his family, but in the community as a whole.
Yeah, kind of the way that the community sticks up for members of the community. I mean, even when they're pissed off at Arnold, they come out to support his family when his grandmother dies.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of, that makes them, that seems to make them realize that, yeah, he's still part of their community and they want him in it.
Mm-hmm.
Or that pretty much any rando Indian driving away from the reservation will give him a lift to school.
Yeah, I did like that. He, mm-hmm. His dad sometimes didn't have money or was sleeping off booze or whatever, and he just kind of start walking to school and try to hitchhike, and if someone was driving into town, they would give him a lift.
If he could get a ride within the first couple miles, he would get to school with... by hitchhiking, and if they didn't, then he'd turn around and go home.
Yeah. Yeah, we should mention it's a 22-mile walk to school,
yeah,
so...
Yeah, he was not walking all the way there. He walked all the way home a couple times.
Yep, because he had to.
Yeah.
Oof, that would take forever.
It would take...
Walk 22 miles?
Yeah, that's a long walk.
Ooh.
That's a really long walk.
Yeah, that's rough shit.
That's gotta be like a 7-hour, 6 to 8-hour walk.
Yeah.
Woo-wee!
Yeah, that'd be tough.
Yeah. I guess you'd get home from school just in time for bedtime.
Woohoo!
You! We didn't talk about the white billionaire.
The white billionaire! This is just a point of interest we thought was funny.
Yeah, this billionaire shows up to his to Arnold's grandmother's mm-hmm. funeral or wake, one of those, with this awesome handmade beaded
dance
costume. Mm-hmm. And says, yeah, I bought this off a guy for cheap a while ago, and I've been racked with guilt about it, and I found out it belonged to this woman. I hired like a anthropological or something specialist, and he said it's definitely Spokane, and it should belong to this woman. And they're like, well, one, she's dead, and two, no, not even close.
Not, definitely not our tribe. Beating looks more like it belongs to this tribe. Your specialist sucks.
Yep.
Also, she never danced, so it would not be hers.
And then all the Indians start laughing.
Yeah, the entire freaking reservation just laughs at him.
And he kind of, like, freezes and then runs away.
Yeah.
Very cartoonishly.
It is a pretty great moment. And I did also love how, you know, he shows up wearing... That's another moment where Arnold or Junior's drawings do a good job, because he drew the white billionaire guy.
Yeah.
With his, like, moccasins and his, you know, like, trying to look as Indian as possible. Right. And then when he was talking about this guy coming and selling him the dress and his respect for Native American culture and all this stuff.
Right, and how Indians think that's kind of annoying when white people say that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. And Junior had all these asides and throw-ins of, like, this guy is so lame.
Yeah.
Someone knocked on my cabin door. You live in a mansion.
Yeah.
He'd admit it.
You rich poser.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were talking about these white people shooting up on the reservation, always trying to be like, I feel communal with your society and your people. And they're all like, shut up. Get out of here.
So, the writing, some of the strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
I'm going to start with what I think is less a weakness and more a data point. And that is that the book is fairly static.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely is not a plot building to a climax followed by a conclusion.
Definitely not.
The characters, except for Arnold, the narrator, are pretty lightly sketched out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's definitely more of a slice of life, get a look at this culture sort of idea. So if there are probably some people who read the book and really strongly dislike that.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I wouldn't blame someone for not liking that, but it didn't bother me.
Yeah. I was telling Ben that I probably recognized about halfway through that the book didn't really have a plot. And then I went, oh, I guess I don't really care.
How much do I need a plot?
We liked Perks of Being a Wallflower that also didn't really have a plot, so...
Yeah, I mean, I do tend to like characters, but I think Arnold's a good enough character as a narrator that it kept my interest.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing is, we haven't read any other books by Native American authors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's perspective that a lot of people don't think about.
I certainly don't.
You don't consider, and so, I mean, that was the main draw of the book for me, was I really enjoyed reading from this perspective that I just, like, don't really ever consider.
Yeah. It was, well, I mean, we talked a bunch about it up front, so I guess I won't expand on it too much, but just to rehash that some of the details in there are things that you wouldn't think about, and some of the cultural information in there is stuff that I probably couldn't have guessed at. So
yeah, and that's, I mean, I also liked the narrator's voice. I thought it was very strong, mm-hmm. and consistent, and it kept me interested in the book. I read it very quickly.
Yeah, me too.
Now, I'm not sure how deeply it's going to, like, stay etched in my mind or anything, but I enjoyed reading it.
Yeah. And so, do we come up with any questions for the series, the books? whatever.
Yeah.
Jesus, Ben.
Does Junior get to go to college and end up drawing comics?
Yeah. I bet he does.
Probably. Well, he is Sherman Alexie, so.
Kind of.
Kind of.
He's pseudo Sherman Alexie. So, how'd you like it?
I just said.
I guess you did. I guess we both did. We just didn't
say our verdict.
Yeah, with drool leaking out of the corners of our mouths. I liked it.
Okay.
It was good. What are you reading right now?
I'm almost done with a book called Fire by Kristen Cashore. It's a companion book set in the same universe, but not really the same characters. To a book I read last summer, something like that. But no one will remember that, so I guess that's not that important.
All right, fair enough. I have apparently entered a full-fledged Dresden-style obsession with the Honor Harrington universe. I'm on the fourth book, Field of Dishonor, which I guess you don't really need to know if you haven't read it. It's military science fiction space opera. How's that? Close enough. With a strong female character written by a man who manages to avoid hitting most of the annoying I'm a man trying to make a strong female character tropes.
Yeah.
Which is kind of stunning that it's happening in a military science fiction setting, frankly, but no, I'm enjoying it. So if you have any comments, questions, or any form of feedback, then you can leave a comment on our website, novelideaspodcast.com.
You can shoot us an email, novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
We are on Twitter, @novelideaspod.
And you can find us on iTunes.
And if you do that, rate, review, comment, all that good stuff.
Etc.
Yeah. And so, next week, we will be reading Beloved by Toni Morrison.
Yep.
And I have never read anything by Toni Morrison.
I don't think I have either, actually.
So, I don't know. Should be interesting.
Yeah.
Unless I despise it.
Second non-white author.
Something tells me it'll be interesting in at least a couple of ways. I know nothing about it.
I don't think I do either. I just know it gets banned.
I know.
All I know.
I'm as ignorant as I could possibly be about this. So, anyway, I think that does it for this one. And we'll see you next time.
Bye. Yeah.